Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 16th of November, 2012. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Your readers today are Jean Carswell.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Lisa Nightingale.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. Now, this week's announcements. Here are a few events on and around, in and around Winchester in the coming week or so. On Wednesday the 21st of November, at the United Church, Jewellery Street, at 12:30 p.m., there's a talk entitled Hope Beyond Loss. And a reminder that on Thursday the 22nd of November, the Christmas market will open in the Cathedral Close, preceded by a torchlight procession from the Great Hall, beginning at 6 p.m. The market will stay open until the 23rd of December. On the same day, Thursday the 22nd of November, the open-air ice rink will open, and that will be operative until the 6th of January. At the Theatre Royal Winchester from the 26th of November to the 1st of December, there is Radio Times the Musical, and the pantomime Aladdin runs from the 12th of December to the 6th of January. Further details of those events and the box office are on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. On Saturday the 1st of December, there's an organ recital at St Mary's Church, Kingsworthy at 6:30 p.m. Tickets can be obtained on the door at the door for £10. At the Chesil Theatre, Winchester, Shakespeare's Love's Labour's Lost will be performed from the 1st to the 8th of December at 7:45 p.m. with a matinee on Saturday the 8th of December at 2:30 p.m. And at the Everyman Cinema next week, you can see The Master and The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn 2. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 16th of November at 7:25 a.m. and begins at 4:18 p.m. On Wednesday the 21st of November, it ends at 7:33 a.m. and begins at 4:11 p.m. The main headlines this week are A Sporting Chance for New Leisure Centre, Police Feeling Dejected and Really Low, and Public to Help Shape Barton Farm Scheme. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Jean.
Yes, A Sporting Chance for New Leisure Centre. Building state-of-the-art facility would be once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. City Council chiefs have been urged to inspire a generation by building a new state-of-the-art sports and leisure centre for Winchester. Now it has emerged that the council could bring in a team of consultants to properly evaluate if a new complex should be built. It comes in the wake of a petition signed by more than 3,000 people calling for a new sports centre to replace the ageing River Park Leisure Centre, which would cost millions of pounds to bring up to date. Winchester civic chiefs say they are increasingly minded to build a new leisure centre fit for the 21st century. Emma Back of Winchester Fit for the Future, a group campaigning for improved sports facilities in the city, presented the petition with 3,334 signatures to the City Council. The group, comprising some 17 sports clubs across the district, is pressing for the replacement of the River Park with a new sports and leisure centre, including a 50-metre pool. Excuse me. Ms Back told councillors last week, local decision-makers must act swiftly but not rashly. The gap in the market for a high-quality multi-sport centre is so obvious that if action is not taken by the council, the gap will be filled elsewhere in Hampshire or by a private company in pursuit of profit, not community benefit. We have a genuine, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to bring fantastic sports facilities to our great city and district, to truly inspire a generation. Councillor Patricia Stallard, portfolio holder for Communities, Culture and Sport, said the council faced an important decision over the future of River Park. Councillor Stallard said the council was not being idle, but was considering employing consultants to produce a report. But Councillor Simon Cook, who was chief leisure officer at Winchester, used to oversee River Park, said a reality check was needed. There are only 29 50-metre pools in the whole country. He said the council could only develop new facilities in partnership with the private sector. But if you don't have a dream, as Obama said, you will never achieve what is wanted, he added. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance and administration, said it was an exciting project, adding, I'm keen to take advantage of the momentum that has built up around the idea. But he warned, finance does cast a shadow. He added that interest rates are low, and a 10 million loan at 3.8% for 40 years would cost £500,000 a year to service. He said, if you can put a business case together, we will back you to the hilt. Council leader Keith Wood said, this is the biggest decision the council is likely to take in the next few years, and bigger than anything in the last 20 years. We are anxious to take it forward and make the right decision.
Police feeling dejected and really low. Cuts leave morale at breaking point. Budget cuts, the axing of frontline officers, and a general feeling that the government has turned against the police. According to the body that represents officers, these are the issues that mean Hampshire's first Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, is set to inherit a force where staff morale is at breaking point. Whoever is elected to the post position will not just have the public holding them to account on big policing issues, they will also need to provide leadership to officers that are battle bruised after a 20% budget cut. A new survey shows that 96% of officers across the country do not feel they have the support of the government, and a third are very worried about being forced to retire because of cuts. The research by the Independent Commission on the Future of Policing has led the former Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Lord John Stevens, to describe the level of police morale as national crisis. Hampshire Police Federation, a body that represents the county's frontline officers, says it is very concerned about morale in Hampshire Constabulary. Chairman John Atner said, we've been saying for a long time that morale is at breaking point. We've had 20% cuts, deeper than any other public sector, and that's a very real and demoralising effect on officers. We accept that we have to take our fair share of pain, but the perception is being, because we have no employment rights, there's very little we can do. It's seen that we've been selected by the government to get an extra kicking. There's not any slack in the system. There's no resilience on the front line. We're down to the bare bones, and that puts immense pressure on individuals. The good thing about police officers is that they just want to get on and do the job to the best of their ability. But they're feeling very dejected and really low. Mr. Abner says he hopes the new Police and Crime Commissioner takes note of the views of officers. He added, whoever is elected, I want them to take time to understand the concerns that police officers have and to take time to listen without judging. They're not only there for the public, they need to inspire officers in uncertain climates, and that is going to be a very difficult task. Five men and one woman will go head-to-head in yesterday's elections. The 85,000 a year post, which will replace the current Hampshire Police Authority, involves crucial roles in setting the police budget, shaping crime-fighting strategies, and hiring and firing the chief constable. One of the first jobs for the New Hampshire Commissioner will be to appoint a new chief constable after Alex Marshall announced that he was leaving for a new job. In the first of ever elections, 41 new PCCs will be elected across England and Wales with the aim of making policing more accountable and transparent.
Public to help shape Barton Farm scheme. Winchester Civic Chiefs are setting up a Barton Farm Forum to allow the public to help shape a 2,000 home development. The new body will include local people, the City Council and Carla Holmes, now that the controversial scheme has got the consent of the Secretary of State, Eric Pickles. Councillor Victoria Weston, portfolio holder for planning and transport, announced the new forum at a full council meeting following a question for Liberal Democrat councillor Robert Hutchison. He had asked what pressure the council was imposing on Carla Holmes to ensure Barton Farm was fully fit for the 21st century and of which the whole district can be proud. Councillor Weston said legally binding Section 106 agreements had been signed with Carla on affordable homes and transport. Councillor Weston said, "Carla Holmes must now submit a design code for approval. I am committed to ensuring that these are of high quality and that Carla works hard to meet the standards we set." Councillor Weston also added, "The proposed forum would be a long-term body which has an important role in helping to ensure that the development is well integrated and successful. Details of this will be published very shortly."
That concludes the headlines. We continue with obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Atkin, Richard Atkin, aged 39. Bill, Dorothy Louise Bill, peacefully at Devonish House after a short illness. Humphreys, Geoffrey Thomas William Humphreys, suddenly aged 68. Metcalf, Harry Metcalf, suddenly but peacefully at Southampton General Hospital, aged 88. Pitter, Colin Pitter. Scott, Ian Scott, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 62. And Warder, Michael Gordon Warder, peacefully at home, aged 75. Christian comment this week is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
And it's entitled The Power of Silent Reflection, and it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. Last Thursday morning, as I nursed my sick car over the Erskine Bridge across the River Clyde to the Honda garage in Paisley, I was half listening to the Today programme on Radio 4. I was suddenly struck by the words that they had permission to broadcast a 15-second silence. I suppose they meant stop broadcasting for 15 seconds. In the event they didn't, or else I missed it. I was listening carefully to the rhythm of the car engine, hoping it wasn't going to grind to a halt in the middle of the bridge. I was also very conscious of my fast heart rate, so I was somewhat preoccupied. Graham Turner, author of a just published book, The Power of Silence, The Riches That Lie Within, and Sister Anne Morris, Deputy Director of St. Bueno's Jesuit Spirituality Centre, were being interviewed about how taking a short time to live in silence can have very positive effects on both mental and physical health. There are many other people who are prepared to vouch for the extraordinary power of being completely quiet. It's not an easy experience, because I think we are tuned to noise in our daily lives, and its absence reveals the busyness of our minds. It has even been the subject of reality television programmes, though not perhaps as popular as Big Brother. Graham Turner's book explores the world of silence and those who recognise its value. It is based on extensive interviews with many whose business is silence and who understand its creative and therapeutic uses. It is a mysterious and unfathomable realm. Sorry about that. Perhaps the most underused of all resources. Many find the very notion of silence alarming or even embarrassing. However, it is often in the silence that God speaks if we let him. This is what happened to me. In a conference on a female patient, after I had been turned down as a ministerial candidate by the Methodist Church, we came to the heading of spiritual needs. Her parents spoke about how sad they were that, because of her behaviour, she could no longer go to church. There was what seemed to me to be a prolonged silence. But in the stillness, I heard God speak and knew what I had to do. The rest, as they say, is history. Jesus himself found God in the quiet and stillness and actively sought out these opportunities to communicate with God. We can all benefit from allowing more time to be spent in silent reflection.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Police will deliver the service we want, says Sarah Robinson. Sir, I wonder if I might reply to Mr. Selby about the role of police commissioners in letters October the 25th. This is without doubt the most important change to the structure of how policing operates in our country since the Second World War, and as to how policing resources are allocated to the villages and towns where we live and work. Through our council tax, we are the people who fund the police. The public have never before had a direct say in how that money is spent. Now we can make sure, as people who fund the public service through our taxes, that the police deliver the service we want. It will no longer be up to civil servants in Whitehall to dictate every detail about the administration of policing to our chief constables. The police and crime commissioners will be a breath of fresh air. As they have to take an oath of non-allegiance on being elected, they will have to operate independently of political interference. They will hold the chief constable to account for the delivery and performance of his or her officers, making sure that police are more accountable and responsive to the needs of their local communities. I should like to point out that many people living in the countryside will welcome the chance to have crimes committed there investigated and even prevented, and may ask for and get more policing in the boonies. Therefore, I strongly urge all residents to go and vote yesterday, that was, on November the 15th, to make sure they have to say a say in how policing is run and how their cash is spent. Don't waste this chance to take part and truly express localism. It will be of little use to complain after the event. And that is from Sarah Robinson of Old Station Road, Itchenabbas.
A chance to pierce Westminster bubble. This is by Terence Morris, Lower Road in South Wanston. Sir, I suspect that, like many of your readers, I have never remotely suspected that the current police authorities in England and Wales are now so ineffectual or unfit for purpose as to justify the money that will be spent on conducting elections for the new police and crime commissioners and paying them in the post. In Hampshire, the salary will be £85,000 per annum. Not broken, why fix, is a question that comes to mind. Details of the candidates reveal all six are listed by some form of political label. Though this may serve to politicise an aspect of policing, it also provides voters with a chance to say what they think about the government, given that fixed-term parliaments mean we can have no general election before 2015. So we can give our vote symbolically to David Cameron, Nick Clegg or Ed Miliband. We can be independent or proclaim our love of justice and abhorrence of corruption. If loathing everything to do with the rest of Europe, we can affirm that too. For the first time in my life, I had considered not voting, but having become aware of this opportunity to send a message to pierce the Westminster bubble, I shall be at the polling station, which would have been yesterday, November the 15th. and that again was by Terence Morris, Lower Road, South Boston.
Bonkers ban. This letter's written by Roger Hockin. Sir, Councillor Keith House, HCC Lib Dem leader, says Conservative plans to ban wind turbines on council land is completely bonkers. He asks, would they rather see a nuclear power station at Fawley or turbines in appropriate sites? I suggest he Googles what area of windmills equal a 1,000-metre wide nuclear power plant. The answer is between 9,600 and 11,200 turbines occupying 375 square miles. The area of the whole of Hampshire is 1,420 square miles. Does Councillor House suggest we give more than a quarter of the area of the county over to wind turbines? That really would be bonkers. And that's written by Roger Hockin, Station Road, Bishop's Waltham.
And Paul Beattie writes, fantastic service. Sir, last month I suffered a major heart attack while at home. I would like to declare massive thanks to my wife, Maria, a ward sister at RHCH Winchester, for being so alert to my condition and being so prompt and precise in calling for an ambulance, and to Helen, the first response paramedic, who with her rapid and expert actions helped to save my life. I would also like to pay tribute to the NHS for the fantastic service I received. The personal care, bedside manner and proficiency of all staff could not have been bettered anywhere on the planet. The experience of professionalism and dedication has been humbling. The support has been emotional, awesome and overwhelming. And that's from Paul Beattie of Bridge Lane, Shawford.
Greenhouse gases and farm animals. This letter is by Marjorie Pooley, Winchester Animal Concern, South Street, Ropley. Sir, one aspect of Andrew Davis's review in the Chronicle on November the 8th of the move towards an extension of the scale of livestock farming is the welfare of the animals, to which he only gives a passing mention. It must be obvious to the most hardened that to keep animals permanently in stalls indoors, even under the best conditions possible, must affect their well-being, for it is an unnatural state. Another aspect is global warming, one of the most pressing problems of today. According to a UN report, livestock's long shadow, animal farming is responsible for 18% of global greenhouse gases emissions, more than is produced by the entire transport sector worldwide, which is about 13.5%. Farming animals is a major source of methane, a greenhouse gas that has the potential to warm the earth 20 times quicker than carbon dioxide. It is estimated climate change could make a million species, including the polar bear, which is due to be extinct by 2050. Consequently, the welfare organisation Animal Aid, based in Kent, suggests we observe one day a week meat-free, taking part in their Meat-Free Monday campaign. This would reduce the pressure of keeping thousands of animals permanently housed indoors. And that was by Marjorie Pooley, Winchester Animal Concern, South Street, Ropley.
This letter is written by Rosemary Conway and is headed Population Issues Constantly Ignored. Your news and letters pages are filled with reports of people concerned on environmental issues and the conflicting imperative needs of housing, energy, roads, airports, healthcare, all long ago made unsustainable by an ever-growing population. When will they realise all their problems have got progressively more insoluble because of refusal to face up to, debate and address population issues? They all want to have their cake and eat it. Jocelyn Penbull of UKIP denounces wind farms as inefficient and destructive of landscape beauty. Maybe they are, and anyone who lives near one is likely to be vociferous in objection. He demands a programme of nuclear power stations. ignoring the horrendously expensive issues of safety, decommissioning and waste storage. Hands up, who wants to live near one? He, his party and every other political party should be pushing for a debate on population issues on national level and working out the groundwork of a policy. The same goes for WinAC, who block out population issues as controversial, under a fantasy that the imperative, conflicting needs of 7 billion people, 9.2 billion by 2050, can be sustainably addressed by lifestyle and technology changes alone. The same goes for the local armchair experts and satirists, fertile of justification to oppose anything that increases their tax and energy bills. And ditto the people who have spent 15 years fighting local development, Twyford Down, Barton Farm, Bullington Cross, or anywhere else. Population issues are long-term, have been neglected, and need to be addressed now. But it needs to be translated into open public debate and pressure on MPs. It is ultimately dishonourable that they all constantly voice concerns about local issues but fail to address the root causes. None of them want to say anything controversial. They're more concerned with keeping their seats. Rosemary Conway, Wesley Close, Winchester.
And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking back to the past, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that is 1812. Wednesday evening, as Nicholls' patrol, consisting of himself, Smith and Limbrick, were passing from Chandos Street to Hemmings Row, when they met with a gang of robbers, who were about to attack the officers, but discovering who they were, fled. But the officers pursued and secured three. Yesterday they were brought before Mr. Burney, the Bow Street magistrate, when they all proved to be notorious characters, James Bainbridge, John Brooks and James Hamilton, alias Fitzgerald, alias Young Snuff. And the second one is at Union Hall on Tuesday. Palm and Telling, suspected of murdering Captain Keith and Mr. Smith, master and chief mate of the Adventurer, South Sea Whaler, were brought up for re-examination. Henry Maddis, apprentice to Captain Keith, in consequence of whose information the prisoners were apprehended, was again examined. His statement was precisely the same as that originally made by him. Both prisoners were fully committed for trial at the Admiralty Sessions.
100 years ago, 1912. Delayed by a belated harvest and hampered in October by weather nearly always adverse to scent, the cub hunting season just closed was nevertheless remarkably successful. A promising opening was made on September the 17th when a small band of early risers assembled in the grey dawn at the old kennels. That foxes know where they are welcome is an old axiom, and sure enough a brace of cubs were found in the spinney not half a mile from the kennel door. One paid the penalty, but the other found safety in a rabbit hole. Another letter is from Dr. F. W. Jolly, medical officer to Alsford RDC, appeared in the Times of Tuesday. Sir, in an appeal for funds on behalf of an infant's milk supply, the mayor of West Ham puts the supply of milk free from any contamination previous to its being sterilised as a first principle, but would not be possible to educate the producer as to what is meant by clean milk.
And 50 years ago in 1962, trained nurses merit a bigger pay increase than the recent wage award of 7.5%, said a speaker at a dinner held by the Winchester branch of the Royal College of Nursing at the Swan Hotel, Alton, on Friday. Mr. E. S. Evans, Medical Superintendent of Lord Mayor Treloar Hospital, Alton, told the gathering of some 60 people, "I don't feel you have had a big enough increase. It is up to you to battle on to get a salary which will attract to the profession the best young men and women in the country." And the Reverend Arthur Morton, OBE, Director of the NSPCC, told the Winchester and Midhants branch at its annual meeting on Thursday that there was a duty on all decent people to give the society information when they knew a child was in trouble. "We are not trying to get people to inform on their neighbours, but how can we help a child in its agony unless someone tells us," he said.
And now, right up to date, or seemingly so, 25 years ago, 1987. One activity certain to boom this winter is the use of chainsaws to clear falling trees. But farm safety inspectors are afraid of arms, legs, etc., and that could be cut up, as well as the branches. Protective clothing includes boots, leggings, gloves, safety helmet with visor, and hearing defenders. The operator should ensure the stop switch is clearly marked and working, guards are in position and in good repair, and that the chain is sharp and tensioned correctly, said Alan Newby, agricultural inspector.
Chronicle comment this week is read by Lisa and will be followed by First Person, read by Brian. Thank you, Lisa.
Help shape policing in our communities. Whoever is elected to the role of Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire today will have an enviable even task to fulfil. And obviously this was the voting for yesterday. Morale among police officers reveals that they are at breaking point, as our earlier story suggested, and this is according to the actual officers themselves. How the new police chief squares the circle of contentious issues, including police pay and cuts to frontline services, is hard to fathom. The commissioner will also have to appoint a new chief constable after Alex Marshall announced he was moving on to the new national role within the force. All of these issues, and more besides, make it important for the public to exercise their democratic right to choose who is to take on this vital job. There may have been talk over the need for police commissioners in the first place, a lack of information about their precise roles, and general apathy among the voting public. But rightly or wrongly, police commissioners are here. And by voting, we all have an opportunity to have a real say in how they shape the future policing of our communities. Isn't that a reason to have cast your vote?
First Person this week is Ron Allison, who says, "Remember where it all began." First, a declaration of interest. I worked for the BBC Radio and Television News for 16 years. I was very proud to do so, and to this day I regard the BBC with affection and admiration. Of course, I realised along the way that it all had faults. We all have our blemishes. But over the past weeks, I've been extremely disturbed by what has been happening in terms of both journalism and administration. Through the shoddy work of some Newsnight journalists, and because of an over-cumbersome management structure, the BBC has found itself in a sorry mess. But this doesn't mean that the whole organisation is rotten. Far from it. But the BBC Trust now needs to identify and appoint a new Director General who can restore confidence in its values. And that means among its staff as well as all the millions of viewers and listeners. That will not be the easiest of tasks, but whoever is the new DG will have a tremendous pool of talent with which to work, and both the opportunities and resources to make a significant mark in the BBC story. I have to admit that following the unfolding of this current BBC saga has been both worrying and totally fascinating. But as I've said, I have an interest. What it must not do, nor should any of us giving our views on the situation, is to forget what is at the heart of it all. That is the terrible truth of child abuse and the exploitation of underage girls and boys. Why Newsnight did not broadcast one story of alleged abuse and did transmit another will eventually be explained and further appropriate actions taken. But the horror of what they were investigating is far, far greater than any professional misdeeds at the BBC. As licence payers, we have no direct say in running the BBC, with no vote to elect trust members or select those who fill the top managerial posts. Now, however, we can be involved in how our country, or at least our county, is policed. Today, for the first time, we can vote for a local police and crime commissioner. Until quite recently, you may not have realised it. Indeed, in many ways, it seemed to be a well-kept secret. But today is the day. Six candidates are standing in Hampshire for a job of considerable significance at a salary of £85,000 a year. Not enough for a new DG, but not at all bad for a PCC.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises three items, the first of which is the director's cut. Well, if you're going to be heckled on a West End stage, you could do worse than have a legend of the theatre interrupt you. Laura Carmichael, former Peter Simmons College student, was starring in the first night of Chekhov's Uncle Vanya when veteran director Sir Peter Hall, 81, called out, "Stop, stop, stop, it doesn't work and you don't work, it's not good enough. I could be at home watching the television." Miss Carmichael has shot to fame in Downton Abbey, but she was making her West End debut. Sir Peter, founder of the Royal Shakespeare Company, has apologised and insisted he'd not been heckling, but was merely briefly disorientated, having dozed off during the play. Ms Carmichael is said to have laughed off the interruption. And there's a little photograph of Laura Carmichael as Sonia in Uncle Vanya with Alan Friel as Yelena. The second item is sticking to the stats. It's a classic example of how the same issue can be viewed differently. Police have reported a steep drop in antisocial behaviour at the Stratton Bates Recreation Ground in Alsford recently. Led by Sergeant Mark Lamper, the community safety team has reduced reports to only two over the last 6 weeks. A survey in September reported 75% of the residents surveyed felt there were no issues of antisocial behaviour. But the Labour Party, campaigning in the election for police commissioner, highlights different figures from the same area. Earlier this year, there was a spate of antisocial behaviour with 21 incidents reporting, including the targeting of a vulnerable man with mental health problems, his father and their disabled neighbour. Same part of Alsford, but a different timescale. The devil is in the interpretation. And finally, savouring the moment. 2 minutes walk, the sign says. It's all of 10 yards. That's about 300 yards an hour. KFC in Upper Brook Street, Winchester, appear to have low expectations of the speed of its customers. A lot of chicken in a bucket must be being consumed. And that item has a photograph of a standing sign saying KFC 2 minutes. And immediately in the background is the shopfront. And now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Jean. Thank you, Jean.
And it's headed Winchester Remembers, remembering those who came back. It's a war memorial with a difference, honouring local men who fought in the First World War and survived, writes Rachel Musker. The heavy losses were felt in nearly every town and parish, as shown by war memorials in churchyards and village greens. But the names of 20 locals who came back from the battlefields are carved alongside seven fallen soldiers on a brass plaque in St Michael and All Angels Church in Bullington, a hamlet north of Winchester. Reverend Karen Kusev, curate of Lower Deaver Benefice, said, "The war memorial is very unusual because it records the names of men who came back to tell the tale. They survived the horrors of the First World War, and many would have gone back to their farm jobs. While it is completely right to remember those who lost their lives, and that is what Remembrance Sunday is all about, We can overlook those who lived with the pain and horror of what they witnessed. They had emotional scars, and many would have had physical scars too. A wreath of poppies was laid beneath the plaque, and all the names read out at a Remembrance Day service last Sunday at nearby Barton Stacey Church. Mrs. Kusev preached about the courage and sacrifice of all those who served their country in the Great War and whose lives were torn apart. She added, "It was not just individuals who were scarred, but families and whole communities. Those killed include Roland Allen, 27, awarded the Distinguished Conduct Medal, and his younger brother Cecil, who was just 17 when he died. The list of survivors include two men with the same surname, believed to be brothers. In 1911, Bullington had just 30 households."
Row over pension fund investments. Bosses of the £3.8 billion Hampshire Council pension fund have come under fire for a policy that bans investment in local property. Outraged Eastleigh Council boss Keith House claimed it was a scandal, as the cash could create more jobs and homes for the local residents. His criticism comes after it emerged that the local government pension scheme snapped up the site of a supermarket in Belfast for £6 million. Councillor House, who is also leader of the Liberal Democrat opposition group on the County Council, said, "Hampshire County Council uses its pension fund to invest in Tesco in Belfast, but is not prepared to help local jobs in Winchester, Southampton, Eastleigh or Basingstoke. Hampshire's pension fund can and should be used to invest in property to get high returns for Hampshire people, but it's a scandal that when investment is needed in Hampshire, our own county stands aside." He went on, "The UK government is encouraging use of pension funds to support jobs and much-needed housing. When will Hampshire County Council start to back the Hampshire economy with jobs and homes for Hampshire residents?" But county chiefs hit back, saying it was a long-held policy to exclude investment in Hampshire, Southampton and Portsmouth to avoid potential conflict of interest with the roles of councils as planning authorities. Councillor Mark Kemp-Gee, chairman of Hampshire County Council's pension fund panel, said only 1.7% of the commercial property market was in Hampshire, and pension fund managers could still hit their targets. He added, "The pension fund has an overriding legal responsibility to achieve the best possible financial return from investments for the pension fund." But he added, "The investment policy was kept under review, and any opportunity to invest in Hampshire would be assessed to see if it maximised returns." Some 48,000 county staff contribute up to 7.5% of their pay packets, while the taxpayer-funded employer contribution is 19%. The pension fund invests in a wide range of property in the UK and overseas, shares and bonds.
Pupils box clever for overseas appeal. Winchester schools have been providing a record number of Christmas gift boxes for needy children overseas. Both Henry Beaufort Secondary and St Bede Primary have beaten their record in providing boxes for the Rotary Club's shoebox scheme. Robert Parsons, director of Winchester Rotary, said Henry Beaufort had given 290 boxes and there were 170 from St Bede. He said, "They have both done terrifically well. Across Winchester schools, we will collect 700 boxes, which is another record for us. Across Hampshire, 25,000 boxes are due to be donated and sent on to poor children in Tanzania, the Philippines, Moldova, Albania and Montenegro. Some 99% of the contents of the boxes is new, and each box is made up by a pupil and their families." Bryony Adams, teacher at Henry Beaufort, who coordinated the project, said, "I'm incredibly proud of their generosity. It shows that even in this economic downturn, the children are still being very generous with their pocket money. They have worked hard in groups to organise things. And there's a lovely picture of the students at Henry Beaufort School with two members of the Winchester Rotary Club on the steps with their lovely Christmas boxes.
Time to apply for round table grants. Charities and groups in the Winchester district are set to benefit from the city's annual Bonfire Night fundraiser. Winchester Round Table is looking to allocate funding from the £30,000 raised on November the 3rd to worthy causes in the area. Round Table is now inviting groups and individuals to apply for grants of around £1,000 each. Around £5,000 of the £30,000 raised will be set aside for the Cash for Causes scheme, run in conjunction with the Hampshire Chronicle, set to start in January. Ian Wilson, Round Table Community Service Officer, said, "We've had a successful bonfire night and raised a significant amount, and now we are looking for suitable causes to distribute the funds to. Last year we gave to a broad range of groups, such as local charities, preschools and schools. But we are also open to grants to individuals. It is about helping people in the Winchester community." He added, "People should put how much they need and what they think they can do with the money, and we will judge each case on its own merits."
Developers rail at new energy plan. Council wants tougher emissions rules. The City Council is at loggerheads with developers over ways to reduce carbon emissions in new homes in Winchester. The Council wants developers to boost energy efficiency in all new homes after 2016 by raising standards to level 5 of the Code for Sustainable Homes, which are tougher than the government's zero carbon regulations. Steve Opachik, Head of Strategic Planning, told the public inquiry into the district's local plan, "We see no reason why we shouldn't seek to go above government requirements if it's practical and viable. It would help achieve radical reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. Winchester cannot solve the problem on its own, but we do not claim we will. Winchester can play its part, and if it's feasible, then why shouldn't we do it?" But developers and planning consultants said it would be too expensive to meet this target without large-scale renewable energy projects like wind farms. Jonathan Riggle of Peter Brett Associates said the only viable solutions for achieving such a policy would be a biomass plant, wind farms, and a great distribution of photovoltaic cells. You would be forcing a developer to put large technology on an urban site that isn't necessarily suitable. Chris Rees of Chartered Surveyors Savills added, "If we're talking £10,000 per dwelling in increases, when you multiply that up by 2,000 units, it becomes a very large figure. The development industry is setting in motion the ability to work these costs into their appraisals. But why should we go beyond that in Winchester? Why is Winchester special?" Mark Emmett of Carla Homes, which has outlined permission for 2,000 homes in Barton Farm, added, "I completely agree with the sentiment that carbon emissions need to be reduced, but I do feel very strongly that the council has got this particular policy wrong. Level 5 is onerous, contrary to the national policy, and practically and philosophically wrong." He added, "Improvements to the fabric of new homes over the past 20 years were already keeping carbon emissions down." But Mr. Opachik replied, "We have a very high carbon footprint, and our response to that is not to make rules that the district is less affluent, is to tackle carbon emissions." Chris Gillam of Winchester FOE added, "At the development stage, you should take all measures you possibly can to reduce the increment carbon. It's much easier than adapting existing housing stock. We have to look at the issue of where you get renewable energy from, and we find it very hard to see where you can without wind turbine energy making a realistic contribution to reducing carbon." Christopher Napier of CPRE said, "Water stress is also an acknowledged problem, and a significant part of that is down to water consumption and consumption increases with new housing developments. we see it as crucial that developers play an important role in reducing that.
Our healthy High Street. Winchester High Street is faring much better in the recession, councillors heard. Only four High Street shops are currently empty and all are in various stages of being let, the full council was told. Across the whole area of the Winchester Business Improvement District bid, there are only 22 vacancies, with 370 businesses that gives a rate of 6%, said Councillor Robert Humby, who's the portfolio holder for Strategic Planning and Economic Development. Councillor Humby added, "Generally, it is good news for Winchester. We are bucking the trend. Nationally, the vacancy rates vary between 11 and 15%. In a written answer to a question from Councillor Fiona Maver, Councillor Humby said, "The city continues to present an extremely attractive location for retailers, with many companies seeking premises but being unable to find a location which meets their specific requirements. A certain level of turnover in retailers is expected and helps enable the city retail offer to keep refreshing itself and meeting the demands of shoppers." Property agents London Clancy recently reported good demand for shop space. It highlighted, I think I should say, two recent lettings to show that Winchester is battling through the recession. 51 Upper Brook Street, a ground floor shop unit of around 1,600 square feet, was let at quoting terms at a rent of $30,000 a year. The shop has been let to an established business, Chinatown Supermarkets, on a 10-year lease. Chinatown is also based in the street. Letting agent Joe Keane said, "The letting to Chinatown Supermarkets is a vote of confidence in Winchester and followed a good deal of interest in the property since it became vacant in February this year." Also just completed is the letting to Bodiger at 11A Parchman Street, a ground floor shop unit of 484 square foot in the well-established boutique or independent retailer's shopping area. Let on a new 10-year lease at close to quoting rent of $14,500 a year, the property is to become an Italian delicatessen. Jim Sawyer of London Clancy said, "This letting has enforced Parchment Street's reputation as a specialised area for good quality retail." London Clancy is marketing shops in Jury Street with Pullen Associates, where two units are under offer and there is interest in the remaining two. Ms Keane added, "We have a number of applicants who we are aware seeking retail premises in locations in the city and who are struggling to find the space they need. Winchester's retail economy appears to be holding up well in tough times due to having a wider shopping demographic, a resident population, student population and tourist visitors."
City hopes to cash in on festive trade. It won't just be jingle bells this Christmas in Winchester, but jingling cash tills for shopkeepers, city councillors heard. The festive season is set to be an economic bonanza, a senior councillor said. Councillor Humby told a meeting of the council, "The ice rink and market have seen a steady growth in numbers, with around 40,000 skaters and up to 350,000 market shoppers anticipated in 2012, thanks to an extended run of the market. This growth has a direct impact on footfall in the city centre and translates into custom for not only shops but eateries, visitor attractions, hotels, the theatre and local B&Bs. Councillor Humby, portfolio holder for strategic planning and economic development, added that attractions outside the city, such as Marwell Wildlife and the Watercress Line, also benefit, making not just for jingle bells, but also jingling tills right across the Winchester district. Winchester's Christmas lights will be switched on tonight, that was yesterday, Thursday, by the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, at 6 p.m. He will be joined on stage by the cast of this year's Theatre Royal pantomime, Aladdin, with entertainment supplied by rock band The Hoosiers, Winchester University Choir, and Intergrate Dance will also be performing. The city's Christmas market and ice rink will open next Thursday, November the 22nd.
Work on historic mortuary chests begin. Winchester Cathedral has started preparatory work for the potentially groundbreaking research into the contents of its mortuary chests. Historians believe the wooden boxes contain the bones of Anglo-Saxon kings, including ancestors of King Alfred and the Danes such as Canute. The boxes were recently taken down from the presbytery screens and moved to the Lady Chapel in the eastern end of the cathedral, where a wooden hut has been erected with a lockable door. The cathedral is hoping for funding from the Heritage Lottery Fund, HLF. In a statement it said, "The Renaissance mortuary chests and their contents are currently in the Lady Chapel, and investigations into the condition of the structure, ironwork and paintwork of the chests have been completed as part of our HLF Round 1 development process. Recommendation for their conservation will be submitted with our Round 2 application in the spring."
Welcome for Archbishop. Senior Hampshire churchmen have welcomed news of the appointment of the new Archbishop of Canterbury, the Right Reverend Justin Welby. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, said, "It's exciting to hear that a new Archbishop of Canterbury has been named, and I speak for the whole diocese in saying that he can be assured of our prayers as he takes up this enormous task. We cannot welcome a new establishment... Sorry, I beg your pardon. We cannot welcome a new Archbishop without acknowledging with gratitude the decade of work and ministry of Archbishop Rowan Williams, whom he succeeds. Leadership of the Anglican Communion is a task more demanding than any of us can imagine, and we look to the Spirit of God to inspire and encourage Bishop Justin." Bishop Tim added, "He faces a range of challenges, expectations, and complex issues that only his faithful walk with God will enable him to address, and we look forward, with Anglicans around the world, to joining him on that path." The Right Reverend Christopher Foster, Bishop of Portsmouth, said, "He will bring his vigorous faith in Jesus Christ and a passion for reconciliation and truth. His previous experience in business and the world give him great insight into the challenges and opportunities for the church and the gospel in the coming years. The new Archbishop will be enthroned in Canterbury Cathedral on March the 21st, 2013.
Winchester Decorative and Fine Arts Society met in the Paul Woodhouse suite for a study day about the Shakers, learning that one of the founders, Mother Anne, had left her home in Lymington and sailed for the New World with her husband. Originally known as Shaking Quakers due to vigorous, energetic dancing during worship, the sect settled in New England and established villages where men and women lived an almost monastic lifestyle. Celibacy, hard work, innovation and invention made them successful, and sometimes converts bought land or a mill to add to their assets. Believing their work was an act of worship, they made each artifact with loving care, paring ornamentation away and enhancing the beauty of simple wooden furniture. Their buildings, although plain, had a symmetry of line and a functionality we could learn from today. Natural light and ventilation were design features, and triple glazing not unknown. Diversifying into production of processed food items and seeds, they were credited with the invention of the circular saw, and even made whiskey and cider when the demand arose. The sect dwindled as worldly pleasures attracted people more than rigour and self-discipline. Now only three Shakers remain. Members were struck by how much we could learn from their values, and all felt regret at their passing. John Erickson, an expert on the Shakers, gave an illustrated series of three lectures and questions, and a fine lunch was provided by the cathedral caterers.
Relief as district post offices retain car licence contracts. Winchester Post Offices will retain vital services after the National Office secured a new car licence contract. The Post Office announced on Tuesday that it reached a 7-year agreement with the Department for Transport to continue issuing tax discs, driving licence renewals and statutory off-road notices, SORN. It's good news for the Kingsworthy Post Office after boss Sanjita Kaura said she was concerned for the future of her branch if it were to lose those services. Mrs. Kaura said, "I'm very pleased with the news. It's such a relief. It completely reassures me about the future, and it means so much for the branch and residents." Winchester MP Steve Bryan added he was delighted the government had backed the post office after he supported Mrs. Kaura 2 months ago. He said, "This is really excellent news and the testament to a huge lobbying campaign waged by the Federation of Sub-Postmasters and individual post office customers. I've had hundreds of constituents tackle me about this, and we left the minister in no doubt that this was the only just decision he could make. This decision is part of delivering on that promise and is excellent news for Winchester, for Kingsworthy Post Office and for the people across the country." Paula Venables, Chief Executive for the Post Office, said, "We're absolutely delighted to have won this important framework contract for the local branches to provide services on behalf of the DVLA. This is a ringing endorsement of the Post Office's strong track record in successfully delivering essential government services and in our ability to successfully deliver to these services on behalf of the DVLA over the next 7 years. The contract also allows the Post Office a gateway to access services in other government departments without having to undertake full procurement exercises."
Cancer Centre appeal launched. It's set to make a life-changing difference to thousands of people, and the campaign to build a new cancer centre to serve people in Mid and North Hampshire has now been officially launched. Guests at the launch included County MP Sir George Young, former Conservative Government Minister Lord Wakeham, and Alsford-based actress Sarah Parrish of Peak Practice and Mistresses fame. The campaign is aiming to raise £5 million of the £18 million total cost to build the ARC Cancer Centre. The Cancer Centre, which should open in 3 years, will offer vital treatments such as radiotherapy alongside palliative care and more general support, including hair care, beauty treatments and financial and employment advice. The Hampshire Chronicle and fellow NewQuest titles, the Basingstoke Gazette and Andover Advertiser, are backing the Cancer Centre fundraising campaign. And there's a lovely picture of the actress Sarah Parrish and the Hampshire Chronicle columnist and his wife, Khalid Aziz, and his wife Kim, and they're toasting the campaign.
"Confusing road signs may have hit trade," says boss. A publican has criticised contractors over roadworks that could have cost him as much as £2,000 in lost trade. Alex Wood, tenant at the Fox and Hounds in Crawley, said roadworks signs in Crawley Road last Wednesday were misleading and suggested there was no access to his pub. Although all of his pre-booked customers turned up for their reservations, Mr. Wood thought he may have missed out on vital passing trade. He said, "It's impossible to tell if or how much trade I have lost. Ironically, all of my bookings on Wednesday managed to turn up, although some had some fun getting here. But Wednesdays have been rather good for walk-in trade lately from people who work at Arkiva, and we didn't see that. There was a sign at the crossroads where the old Rack and Manger pub was that said, 'This road is closed for 3 days.' It appeared there was not one single road accessible to Crawley, although you could get in by coming in off Stockbridge Road at the turn into Arkiva. But it wasn't communicated properly. I worry because it could affect my trade over the 3 days, and that could mean losing out on anything up to £2,000, a chunk I cannot afford to lose." But he added he has since met with the foreman of the contractors and the signs had been improved. Mr. Wood added, I made some angry noises and we put our own signage up at the top of the road. And then a couple of hours later, the foreman came in to apologise. He said correct signage would be put up, which they have now done, to be fair. The works were part of a county council programme, and Councillor Mel Kendall, Executive Member for Environment and Transport, said they took quick action to clarify the signs. He said, in response to the landlord's concerns about the effect of our works on the pub's trade, we have reviewed the signing to avoid any further confusion. And there's a picture in full colour of Paul Chilton, the bar supervisor, and manager Alex Wood of the Fox and Hound, standing outside with the roadworks behind them and a big notice saying road closed in front.
Millions of trees at risk as dieback spreads. Hampshire is on the alert as ash tree dieback starts edging towards the county. The disease is now established in East Anglia, and there also have been confirmed cases in Berkshire and Kent, sparking huge concern nationally that millions of trees are at risk and the landscape endangered. A national survey overseen by the Forestry Commission last week found no cases in Hampshire, said Nina Williams, Forestry and Woodland Development Officer for the South Downs National Park. Hampshire is one of the most wooded counties in southern England, with the New Forest and swathes of trees in the South Downs National Park east of Winchester. The national park is 23% wooded, some 38,000 hectares. Ms. Williams said the latest report from DEFRA is that it's here to stay and is likely to come this way. In Europe, it travels 30 kilometres a year with the spores spreading in the wind. The nearest place to the South Downs National Park is about 20 kilometres away near Horsham in Sussex. Fortunately, in Hampshire, beech is predominant as the underlying rock of main chalk. Ash's importance is that it's a pioneer species, the first trees that colonise a clearing. But in Hampshire, it tends to be scattered through woods, so its loss would not devastate the landscape in the same way that Dutch elm disease did in the 1960s and 70s.
Village lit up by fireworks event. A fireworks display in Broughton went with a big bang, with the pyrotechnics lighting up the night sky over the village sport field. Organisers of last Monday's display say the weather was perfect and there was a good public turnout. Chairman of Broughton Fireworks Committee, Brian Keane, said £3,000 worth of pyrotechnics went up in flames and smoke at the show. Before the fireworks were lit, more than 100 people took part in the torchlight procession from the village square to the sports field. Mr. Keane said the display was slightly bigger than last year, but the number of people who came along to the fireworks was down on previous years. This may have been down to the fact that Monday night was the first for school children after the half-term holiday, and there were firework displays at the weekend. Besides the bonfire and fireworks, there were hot dogs and other refreshments.
This is a review of the Winchester Operatic Society, The Merry Widow, at the Theatre Royal Winchester. It's headed Lively Evening of Mystery and Romantic Intrigue. Under the musical direction of Derek Beck, the orchestra at Winchester Operatic Society's opening night of The Merry Widow instantly put us in the mood for a lively evening. Then Tony Eyre's pacey direction grabbed the audience and swept us through parties and balls with dollops of mystery and romantic intrigue. Alison Bradley's Anna was delightfully coquettish, flirtatious and highly colourful, in direct contrast with her stark black attire. The dashing Count Danilo, an embassy official who spends most of his time drinking and debauching rather than on diplomatic duties, was played to a T by Adrian Hickford. Tony Blackshaw was a wonderfully pompous stuffed shirt ambassador. He and his secretary, Nijagus, Graham Light, raised many titters as they treated us to dialogue reminiscent of scenes from Yes, Minister. A special mention must go to Katie Hickson as the ambassador's wife. The projection and clarity of her voice while singing and speaking was of the highest quality. A highlight of the performance was the Women, Women, Women song and dance routine by the leading gentleman under the expert choreography of Suzanne Hall. This was a superb start to the Society's centenary season.
Eateries join campaign to help homeless. A charity campaign involving some of Hampshire's top restaurants and pubs is helping to raise much-needed funds for homeless people in the county this Christmas. Originating in London and established in 1998, Street Smart is a charity campaign which raises money simply by participating restaurants and pubs adding a voluntary £1 to each table's bill during November and December. Street Smart was introduced to Hampshire last year by a local charity society of St James, SSJ, and raised £5,000. Restaurants and pubs taking part this year include Lainston House Hotel, Chesil Rectory, The Old Vine, Winchester, Running Horse in Alsford, The King's Head Hursley, Chestnut Horse Easton, and Green's Restaurant and Bar in Wickham. Ashton Gray of The Old Vine Pub said, "Sweet Smart is an easy and effective way for diners to celebrate the festive season and to spare a thought for those less fortunate."
Meeting Queen was highlight for Bob. A well-known Winchester photographer who worked regularly for the Hampshire Chronicle has died aged 94. Bob Solars, here's a picture of him holding his camera to the right, who lived in Sparshold, passed away on October the 16th. His funeral was held at St Stephen's Church in Sparshold. Mr Solars served in the Royal Marines in World War II and returned to his birthplace, Winchester, where he set up a photography business in 1952 with a studio in City Road. As well as the Chronicle, he took photographs for the Southern Daily Echo, as well as many national newspapers. Over the years, he specialised in niches such as Winchester College and the military. Talking to the Chronicle on his 90th birthday in February 2008, he recounted his nicest memory as a photographer. It came when the Queen opened the Sir John Moore Barracks near Littleton in the mid-1980s. He had taken her picture some three decades earlier when she attended a Royal Green Jackets party at St Cross Cricket Club in 1955. He had finished taking a picture of Her Majesty in the officer's mess after the opening. And he says, "As she got up after I had taken the photograph, the Colonel, Mike Dewar, was escorting her, and suddenly I heard my name being called out by Colonel Dewar, who I knew quite well. He escorted the Queen up to me and we talked about when I first photographed her more than 20 years earlier. That was one of the best things that has ever happened to me," he said.
Ladies are getting a kick out of football. An explosion in membership has seen Winchester become home to the largest female football club in Hampshire. Such is Winchester City Flyers' rate of growth, they are now in need of a new home. From 35 female members in 2009, the club now boasts 140 players, with Winchester and Chalmersford MP Steve Brine backing their search for a new ground. Mr. Brine said, "I am so proud to have such a vibrant girls' football club in my constituency, and I was very interested to hear firsthand their hopes and plans for the future. I know the club is seeking to realise their dream of a permanent home so they can take the club to the next level, and I will do all I can across the city to help them achieve this." Tony Pantelli of Winchester City Flyers said, "The growth of the Flyers in recent years has been truly phenomenal. Established in 1996, the club runs teams from under-8s up to a full adults 11. And there's a very happy photograph here in colour of all the girls in the under 15 team. And they're all smiling, all very fit looking and very happy.
Club's crisis meeting thrashes out way forward. Proceedings at a village social club became decidedly unfriendly following a mass resignation by its committee. Members of Twyford Social Club held a crisis meeting last week which saw heated exchanges. More than 100 people packed into the club on Queen Street as villagers try to save it from closure. Members chose to stay tight-lipped on the origins of the spat until the meeting, when accusations flew and tempers flared. One local, who asked not to be named, told the Hampshire Chronicle, "It gets to a stage where you have two or three people doing all the work, and eventually they get fed up doing it." Many residents feel the club is largely used by people from outside the village, and that people living in Twyford have little say in how it's run. Outgoing Secretary Bridget Morby lives in Bishop's Waltham, for example. Last month, concerned villagers held an informal meeting at a resident's home, where more people were encouraged to join the club in a bid to secure its future. To add to members' woe, the club must find thousands of pounds for a new roof. Following last week's meeting, a new committee has been formed, and Jeff Potter was installed as new secretary. Mr. Potter said, "The meeting did start off quite colourful, and that was born out of frustration from the members and a lack of communication from the previous committee." Club steward Phil Vallance said, "At least it's shaken things up, which is perhaps what we needed, and all of a sudden people are taking an interest in the club."
Art and food on the menu for pupils. Winchester school children were treated to a day of painting and pizzas earlier this week. Pupils from the Westgate, King's and Henry Beaufort secondary schools got their creative juices flowing on Tuesday with a day of art and cookery. They met up with Jenny Mancaster and Rachel Alexander of artist group The Colour Factory to learn about the painted bollard gallery in the square, before heading to Jamie Oliver's Union Jack's restaurant in the Broadway to make their own pizzas. It came about after Mr. Oliver and Chris Bianco, who runs the Winchester restaurant, sponsored one of the bollards earlier this year. The Colour Factory unveiled the design to the children, and it will be painted later this month. Miss Mancaster said, "Today is a continuation of inspiring children to be creative. Each bollard here is inspired by a different artist, and the design for this particular bollard is based on Sir Peter Blake's work, while it also reflects the interior of Union Jack's." Charlie Demant, head of Year 10 of Westgate, who coordinated the project with the other schools, said, "The idea was to get children who are creative and love cooking, but who do not always get many opportunities, and to help them meet people who are in the business." After making their pizzas, the children went to the Colour Factory base in Gordon Road to create artwork based on both Sir Peter, who designed the sleeve for the Beatles album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and food. The artwork will go on display at Union Jack's later this year. And there's a lovely picture of the students standing in front of one of the bollards in the square that's due to be painted.
Boundary proposals opposed. Winchester Tories are divided over opposition to the removal of Alresford from the parliamentary constituency. There has been anger in Alresford and villages such as Byton, Gundleton and Old Alresford after the Hampshire Chronicle revealed a proposal to merge it with the North East Hampshire and Alton constituency. At a full council meeting last Wednesday evening, members voted to oppose the Boundary Commission proposal after a handful of Conservatives defied their group to support a Liberal Democrat motion. Councillor Margot Power, Liberal Democrat, who represents Alresford and proposed the motion that the City Council opposes the plan, said, "Some 7,000 residents in Alresford will reside at the end of a 30-mile-long constituency with an MP who is bound to be more active in the northern end, where the vast majority live. There is nothing in common, apart from the fact we are both in Hampshire and have a retained fire service." But Councillor Robert Humby, deputy leader of the Tory-controlled council, said it should not be a city matter to make representations, but down to individual parishes. "The Boundary Commission is trying to ensure that all constituencies have about 80,000 voters."
Silent tribute to the fallen. Winchester fell silent on Sunday as thousands gathered in the cathedral to remember those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. This year's Remembrance Sunday fell on the actual date of the armistice, which signalled the end of the First World War, November the 11th. Remembrance Sunday was marked by servicemen and women, past and present, joined by the public to honour those who fell not only in the two world wars, but also more recent conflicts such as Falklands, Iraq and Afghanistan. Rear Admiral Ian Henderson shared his thoughts during the sermon. He said, "The numbers lost may be small by comparison, but the sight of a coffin coming back from Afghanistan is a solemn reminder of lives shattered." Led by the Dean of Winchester Cathedral, the Very Reverend James Atwell, the service began at 10 a.m. and the cathedral was completely full, with uniforms of every description, from the parachute regiment to the fire brigade and from Boy Scouts to the ambulance service. Winchester Cathedral Choir began proceedings by singing Lawrence Binyon's They Shall Not Grow Old, with the event culminating with an act of remembrance at the War Memorial on the Green. Wreaths were laid, with Captain Christopher Fagan representing the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan. It was an exceptionally clear and bright morning, with many medals and ceremonial swords on display, glimmering brightly in the sun as the last post was sounded. Members of the public and service personnel alike agreed it was a fitting tribute. James Clinker, 67, who is a former soldier and presently works at Worthy Down, said, "The sermon was absolutely brilliant." And this is accompanied by a picture of several servicemen with bowed heads, presumably during a 2-minute silence.
Thief swipes poppy box. A thief stole a poppy appeal box from the counter of a Winchester shop. The snatch of the collection for the Royal British Legion happened at D&G Hardware Shop in St George's Street last Thursday. Toby Roberts, director, said, "These people are prepared to do anything. It has stunned us that people are prepared to stoop so low." It was unclear how much was taken, although Mr. Roberts said the box was nearly full.
Foie gras protesters target restaurants. Animal rights campaigners are claiming victory after targeting two of Winchester's premier eateries. Hotel Divin on Southgate Street and the Wickham Arms on Kingsgate Street were visited by activists angry that foie gras had been served. The protesters visited both establishments to hand out leaflets and gather signatures for a petition, collecting around 150. Activist Marjorie Pooley claims the Wickham Arms and the Hotel Divin both reneged on previous agreements not to serve the controversial dish. Hotel Divin head chef Matt Chorley gave protesters a statement that foie gras will no longer be served there. John Howard, manager of the Wickham Arms, which was recently crowned Town Pub of the Year, said he could not make any promises that foie gras would be removed from the menu permanently, as it was a very popular dish.
New Look Town Pub unveiled. A landmark pub in Alsford reopened last weekend, supported by fellow traders, councillors, punters and MP Sir Steve Brine. The renovated Horse and Groom on Broad Street is now being run by Kate and Richard Williams, since being taken over by Fuller's, the London-based brewery that also owns the Bishop on the Bridge in Winchester. The couple said they'd be focusing on turning the pub into a place for food as much as drink. Mrs. Williams said, "I don't think you can run a pub now without aiming at the food market." The Horse and Groom has been a traditionally wet pub, but we want a better balance. Our location makes us the perfect pub to do that. We don't want to focus on anything in particular, like sport, but we want to be a pub for the whole community to come in, and we encourage as many clubs and societies as to come in as possible. Fuller's has spent around £400,000 on the pub, and the renovations and the new managers said it was because the company, faith in business, will do well. Mrs. Williams added, "It fits in with the vision of the company, and Fuller's has always been looking for a pub in Alsford. It's always been a very keen being very keen for a place here. And that's accompanied by, again, they're all jolly pictures, aren't they, of the horse and groom landlord, Richard Williams, and his wife, Kate, and they're joined by staff and friends at the reopening. And one's got a drink in his hand, so that's good.
West End stardust at school. Things went wild at a Winchester primary school. Children at St Swithin's Juniors got to grips with Maurice Sendak's Where the Wild Things Are as choreographer and West End star Charlotte Bull ran a dance workshop, encouraging pupils to engage with the book in a way that captured their imaginations. Charlotte, who is currently performing in the West End musical We Will Rock You, helped the youngsters create and perform in a 90-second dance piece. The initiative is run by the West End in Schools, a theatre company that brings musical actors into primary schools. A spokesman for the school said, "St Swithin's was thrilled to bring a little West End stardust into school." And the picture with it is of the children in their gym kits standing in a lovely dancing pose.
Fewer call-outs for Halloween. Hampshire police had fewer incidents of antisocial behaviour to deal with this Halloween. Between 4 p.m. and 11:59 p.m. on Wednesday, October the 31st, police had 359 emergency calls and 897 non-emergency calls, both fewer than the previous year. Around 197 of those calls were antisocial behaviour related, 102 less than in 2011, a reduction of 34%. It followed a campaign where police distributed thousands of no-trick-or-treat posters to vulnerable and elderly residents to display.
Perrins School in Alsford is consulting parents over plans to take on more pupils and to alter the criteria for admissions. The secondary school wants to raise its admission number from 208 to 215 with effect from September 2014. The expansion follows local house building and the number of brothers and sisters from families outside the catchment area wanted to follow their older sibling into school. Perrins also wants to give priority to children of parents employed at the school or who are recruited to the school in skills shortage area. The school says some potential candidates have been put off by the lack of school space for their child. The consultation period runs until January the 18th, 2013. The governors are due to make a decision early in the new year.
Grant success. Winchester civic chiefs have been pleased to by the take-up of grants to help apprentices and boost business. Some 20 inquiries and 6 applications have been made for apprenticeship grants that offer to help youngsters with clothing, fuel and travel costs. Councillor Robert Humby, portfolio holder for strategic planning and economic development, told the full council that there had also been 9 applications for grants for up to £1,000 to micro businesses.
Cannabis confiscated. Police in Bishop's Waltham have allayed fears of a drugs problem in the town following remarks made at a parish council meeting last month. Sergeant Susan Innes of the Meon Valley Safer Neighbourhood Team confirmed that although some youths had been apprehended with a small quantity of cannabis, there was no need for residents to be unduly concerned.
Country Market's Christmas theme. Winchester Country Market is holding a Christmas fair later this month. One of 10 country markets in Hampshire, it meets every Friday morning at Badger Farm Community Centre from 8:30 a.m. till 11 a.m. The Christmas fair takes place on Saturday, November the 24th from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. with homemade cakes and produce on offer, as well as crafts, gift workshops and demonstrations.
Jailed for breaking community order. A Winchester man has been jailed for 6 weeks for breaking a community order. James Pammant, 26, of St Cross Road, failed to attend for unpaid work 3 times in October, Basingstoke magistrates heard. Magistrates activated sentencing for the previous 2 offences of shoplifting for willful and persistent failure to comply with the community order.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Jean Carswell.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Lisa Nightingale.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet, and when you put the label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.